Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Entrepreneur me, you too, your dream business doesn't need to fail by Tom Souten, is based on Tom's lifelong experience as a successful small business person. You'll read about his successes and failures, the principles that have made Tom and his family live comfortably. Tom is a graduate of Northwestern School of Business with a BS in Investment Management, was a Standard Planned Investments trainee, officer in the U.S. Navy, Vice President, General Manager, New Era Milling Company, a family-owned business in Kansas, also Vice President, Archer Daniels Midland, and owner and president of Kansas City Bank Company, now in its 33rd year. And Tom Souten, author of Entrepreneur Me, You Too, Your Dream Business Doesn't Need to Fail, is our guest on This Week in America. Tom, welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. It's my pleasure.
I love having you on to talk about this. So many people say, what if? They go through their whole life, what if? I don't like my business, but I don't like my job, but what if? And then they talk themselves out of it. What inspired you to write the book? Is it to motivate us to do like you did and just do it?
Well, it actually incubated a couple of years back. I was having a sandwich at a Subway out here in California near the big Marine Corps base, Camp Pendleton. And sitting next to me were four young men in civilian clothes, but they sure looked like Marines. And one of them came over and said, would you join us? And I thought, wow, what the world? A bunch of young guys want to talk to me. So I went over, and they'd all been recently discharged from the Marine Corps. And they all had ideas of starting their own business. And they said, but we're afraid that we'll fail. I said, wait a minute. You guys driving around Afghanistan, dodging IUDs, and you're telling me you're afraid? Anyway, it got me to thinking how many people are out there that are afraid to start businesses because of failure. And then, COVID came along, and it kind of exacerbated the thought because so many people working from home thinking, wait a minute, I don't want to go back to the office. I want to stay at home. I wonder if I could start my own business. So that's how it got kind of started. And the more I thought about it, it took me about a year because I'd go through periods of thinking about it and coming up with different ideas. And I'd jot them down on a piece of paper and then I'd write them out and I just kept going. So that's how it got started, Rick.
You've got so many great stories and examples, ideas, successes, and failures in your book. The book is Entrepreneur Me, You Too, Your Dream Business Doesn't Need to Fail. Tom Souten is the author and our guest on the program. Talk about maybe some of the more interesting stories in your book about entrepreneurs. You've got so many, and I was listing them, and I thought, well, just ask you for some of your favorites to get the point across that you can be successful.
Well, one that stood out among all the others was a man by the name of Ewing Kaufman.
Oh, yes.
And he had been discharged from the Navy after World War II and went to work. He lived in Kansas City and was brought up by a single parent, his mother, probably in difficult times. So he always had a feeling for, disadvantaged people. But anyway, he went to work for this Illinois company, and in a relatively short period of time, he was making more than the president of the company in commissions. So they cut his territory and reduced his commissions, and it enraged him. So he quit, and he started what was called Marion Laboratories in his garage with $5,000, and I think four former employees of the Illinois company. And over just maybe 5 or 6 years, Marion Laboratories grew dramatically. And in 1998, I think his sales were pretty close to $1 billion. And Merrill Dow Pharmaceuticals bought them out, and it became Marion Merrill Dow. Or he merged with them. And at that point, he became a multimillionaire. And then several years later, the big German company, Hertz, bought out Marion Merrill Dow, and Ewing became a billionaire. And with that, he started to give away his money. He started a foundation in Kansas City, half of which was to help entrepreneurs. The other half of their agenda was to help disadvantaged kids in the Kansas City area. And he endowed it with over $2 billion.
Amazing.
And concurrently, the Kansas City Athletics had moved out to Oakland, and he went to work to get a major league team in Kansas City and formed the Kansas City Royals, became their significant owner, and gave that to another foundation. At the time of the gift, it was over $1 billion. So it was just an amazing kind of bootstrap kind of story of a guy that started out in his garage and got into some really fast-growing markets and made it work for a whole bunch of people.
Another...
One of the more interesting stories was Ewing loved to play golf, and he would gamble with his golf buddies. And it wasn't small time. They'd be gambling thousands of dollars on each hole. And in order to stay competitive, he'd take lessons from the golf pro, and he'd tip them with Marion Laboratory stock. And the golf pro would just put them in the drawer thinking they weren't worth anything. And
wow.
So a year or two later, Ewing was talking to the golf pro. He says, "You got any idea what your shares are worth?" And the golf pro said, "Well, I just never thought they'd be worth anything." Well, they had ballooned over $1 million. So it was a true story. And so there were something like 300 or 400 people that were connected with Ewing that became multimillionaires through the whole time. Very interesting story.
Interesting story, and several aspects of that. If you're going to start a business, do it in your garage. People seem to have success in doing that. But that actually started for him when his short-sighted employer punished him for being successful, cut his commission, and he decided to go off on his own.
Yeah, that was he was really enraged.
And, yes.
You know, so he started it with $5,000. Worked out of his garage.
That's just
kind of a real bootstrap type of company, you know.
That story and so many more in Entrepreneur Me. You too, your dream business doesn't need to fail by Tom Souten. The book's available wherever books are sold. The link's on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. How do you think of, did you think of the metaphor of a lemonade stand as a model for startup businesses? This is fascinating, the world we live in now, and you equate that to a lemonade stand, and I love the analogy here.
That was, I was coming back, I go to the gym frequently, and I was coming back, and I go through a residential area, and right at a corner where I normally turn were two young boys. And they had this lemonade stand out and were selling lemonade for $2 a drink. And so I stopped and got out and I said, "Can I take your picture?" And I did. And I got to thinking about it and I thought, wow, you know, it's really the perfect business. You're selling a product that has water and everybody likes. You're not for cash. You're not extending credit. It's in a market that's growing on a hot summer day, at least. People like the product, and it doesn't take a lot of money to get into it. And so it became the thought of if people could model their business, a startup business, around that type of thinking, they're bound to be successful. It was just sort of a thought that came to me after seeing these two young guys selling lemonade.
Well, and then you say with the internet, it's almost like having a lemonade stand on every street corner in the world. It does take your product, whatever it is, worldwide, doesn't it? I mean, this really had to be a game changer for entrepreneurs.
Oh, yeah. And you could, you know, my mother used to sew children's clothes for her grandchildren. She'd go over to JCPenney's and pick up these layout models, so you could lay it out on the fabric, cut the fabric, and sew it to children. And as she developed skills in doing that, all of her friends would say, "Can you make clothes for my children?" And she said, "No, I can't do that." But it was kind of a classic idea of a startup business. And she wasn't interested in starting up a business, but along the same lines, you know, making something for cash, making something that people want, not a lot of money to get it started, and so forth.
You know, you bring up a good point. When you were growing up, you had a paper route, and young people probably don't understand what a paper route is, but it was a great way to make some money. Little did we know that that was sort of an introductory lesson into being a businessman, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, back in its time, it was very sought after, and you had to start out as a sub. And it was like abusive startup wages of like 25 cents a day. But, the you know, it's like you do all of the grunt work, fold the papers.
Yes.
Very often serve the route with your bicycle, whatever. And you got paid next to nothing, maybe enough to buy a box of popcorn at the movie stores back then. But the payoff was if you stayed there and you could get the route after the route owner went off to school or whatever, then it became a really good business. And my route had two parts to it. One was commercial, the other was residential. And so the commercial end, you had to, the paper company would send you a bill once a month for the paper. And you'd have to go out and collect enough money to pay that bill. So the first half was pretty easy because the commercial guys paid you off pretty quick. The residential guys, that's another story. They would, many of them would say, "Well, I'm a little short this month. Can you come back later?" Well, you know, later never came. So I'd cut off their paper, and then the paper company would say, "Well, you can't do that." And I would argue, "Well, wait a minute, they're not paying me." So the whole ended up, you know, the lesson learned was a lot of people just don't pay their bills. And that stayed with me the rest of my life.
Yeah, that was a good lesson. And it's interesting the number of people that would hide when they would see your bicycle come into the neighborhood, because they do, like, on a Saturday, you're out going to collect your money. But it's a lesson that has stayed with you for your life. The book is Entrepreneur Me, You Too, Your Dream Business Doesn't Need to Fail, by Tom Souten, our guest on the program. What are do you think the main causes or main causes for business failures? Why do businesses not make it?
Well, I turn that around and maybe say, why can they make it? One of the things that I think people don't realize is there's an incredible amount of help out there. I think if you look at every county and every state of this country, has business development offices. And they're usually tied in with the SBA, retired business people, accountants, bankers, other financial people, experienced people. And they're there for nada. They're there to help. And so if people would utilize that source to help develop their business plans on a solid basis, they really up the chances of success. The other items that always seem to be out there, a big item, changing markets. A market can change almost overnight. And so you have to stay on top of it. And you hope that your business is in a growing market. And there's examples of big companies tanking because they failed to take to kind of follow what was happening within their market. And then finally, liquidity. It's almost like people get to going, making money, and they don't put a lot of it away in the bank. And very often, I call them tsunamis, come along, and they're not frequent, but they do come. And a good example would be in 2008, the mortgage crisis,
Oh, yes.
and it was devastating to both big and small businesses. And then more recently, COVID in 2021, 22, whatever, was just horrible from the state. I mean, if you had a restaurant and you had to shut it down, your expenses don't shut down. And so you've got to figure out how can I live to get through this? And you've got to have enough liquidity to do that. So I think those are the main issues. Well thought out business plans with the help of others, liquidity, and then staying on top of the markets.
What about technology developments? I touched on the internet. All of a sudden, it's a game changer. We're connected with the world. What are some of the technology developments that you see providing opportunities that maybe 20, 30 years ago, maybe when you were starting in business, weren't available to you?
Yeah, well, of course, the internet's a big game changer. And then I think more recently, the brouhaha about artificial intelligence, which is really warranted, but artificial intelligence has been around for years, but probably it was only available to the larger companies. You know, basically, if you were to define it, it's like computers thinking like humans and then being able to aggregate through algorithms, whatever, massive amounts of data across a broad spectrum. Well, today, you know, it's out there for entrepreneurs, and they could look at financing opportunities, government regulations, changing markets. And I showed some examples of how markets could change, and it's a great tool for entrepreneurs. And then, you know, the opportunities, I think technology is advancing so rapidly and it's changing everything. You know, just recently, I read an article about a robo-taxi in Phoenix, and it's become mainstream. In fact, the mayor of Phoenix decided she was going to take a ride on a robo-taxi and arrange for it. Of course, they had a couple of cars following in front of
Oh,
her
yes.
with her security detail, but it worked out just great. I don't know why Phoenix, but it seems to be working. Some of the developments that are game-changing out there, you know, there's Nippon, I think, or one of the Japanese car manufacturers has a plant that's lights out. It goes all night long with robotics. And maybe there's a couple of people manning the computers in the background, but it's kind of amazing. As that technology develops, it's going to be a huge game changer and increase productivity in this country dramatically. Another development that is just kind of hidden out there are 3D printers. And people really don't realize the potential of them,
Oh,
but
yes.
they're getting more and more into the mainstream where complicated parts can be made from all kinds of materials for aircraft, for automobiles, for computers, parts that probably came from China. And these types of 3D printers can run silently through the night, weaving away whatever the computer tells it to do. And I think it's going to be amazing what that'll do for this country. And I think that, you know, we're seeing changes in the import of goods from China anyway. For the first time ever, we're importing more product from Mexico than we are from China. And I think that trend is going to continue as we see more technology develop on things that can be made with machines, don't require human hands. And then the human hands part of it will end up down in Mexico with NAFTA or, you know, whatever. So I'm very bullish about what's going to happen in our future with technology. I mean, even I went into a Japanese restaurant the other day, and here comes a robotic server, and it had the menu right there for me to punch in what I wanted. And then it waddled back in to wherever it was hiding, and later on came out with the meal. So it's out there, and it's going to just keep getting bigger and bigger.
Our guest on the program is Tom Souten. He's author of Entrepreneur Me, You Too, book available wherever books are sold. A link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You talk a lot about sustainability. We've talked about that in some of the conversation up till this point. What are some of the best businesses now for sustainability?
Well, that's a kind of a buzzword that a lot of big companies use, you know. So we've been in business umpteen years, but it's really important for entrepreneurs to think about that. It's like, okay, if you look at what's happening in the automotive industry with e-cars, it in the crystal ball looks like they're definitely going to be a factor. And as the mileage goes up with them, they're going to be a bigger factor. And so what does that mean? Well, I use the example if, like, your uncle has an oil change business franchise, wants you to take it over, you have to ask the question, what are e-cars, as they penetrate the automobile market, going to do to that market? And so it's kind of a think ahead, use your crystal ball. Are you going to be around in this business with all these technological changes and whatever that are coming down the road? I use an example of a company that was called a widow's stock, Kodak, a great company.
Yes.
Buy it, keep it forever, give it to your grandmother. She could collect the dividends forever. And ironically, they developed the digital camera and put it on the shelf. What was going on was they were making so much money in film sales that they just ignored the potential of the digital camera. And underneath it all, the market was changing. The Japanese could see that, and they took it over, and now they're dominant, and Kodak went bankrupt. So it's kind of an interesting story of technology and sustainability.
Some people say, I'd like to get in business for myself, but I don't have tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Where did the idea of using other people's money come from?
Well, I had a professor at Northwestern that was a multimillionaire. He was a lead professor in our class for analysis, you know, stock analysis and financial. He would arrive at school in a chauffeur-driven Bentley and from downtown Chicago. And he would start every lecture with writing big words on the blackboard, use other people's money. And he said, if you don't learn anything, learn this when you get out of this class. And So it's basically true. It's hard for startups because people don't, you know, with pro forma projections of, you know, are always pretty interesting, but they don't mean anything to investors because they're not real. And investors are always looking for, if I put my money in here, am I going to get it out? Can I make money? And there are people out there that have lots of money, and if the idea is really a good idea and the markets, and they're in the markets that are growing and they have a competitive product, they could be a source SBA has what they call microloans, and for real small startups can be activated. I don't like borrowing from banks, and I iterate that several times throughout the book, because they're always loaning short term, and it goes back to my experience in the grain milling industry, when they were always threatening to close us down, and we were just very, very lucky to take this family business, a flour mill, into a sustainable state. But it came back to me that there are many, many ways to finance businesses that are viable. Ongoing businesses are easier if they're in growing markets. And, you know, the buyout of that business doesn't impair its future viability and future sustainability. So those are the better ones. Of course, the lemonade approach. You start with nothing. And there was a great story about this guy in Boston. He immigrated from England, came over, borrowed a lot of money, started the business, promptly went broke. Second time around, he learned, and he had like $500, and he thought there was a market for English garden tools. So he bought, and he researched it, he bought $500 worth of English tools, sold them, collected the money, and then turned around and put the profit back into buying more English tools. And he kept doing that, built the business, wrote a book, which is referenced in my book, about you know, how to do it from the grassroots up. So there's lots of ways. And I also recommend don't borrow money from family. That's a dead end. It always creates problems. Even if the venture is successful, the family gets involved, and it becomes contentious, and it's just not a good idea. So there's lots of ways. There's other ways that are probably less likely. There's the penny stock market, but if you go that route, you've got to have a pretty viable business to do it. There's a good example, GameStop, which happens to be play right now, big time, started out as a penny stock, but they had a viable beginning. But so that's not really a good way unless you can buy a business that's viable and then take it into that venue. But you have to ask yourself, if you can do that, why would you want to be public? There's also some wildcard deals with out there that are tied to other mechanisms to raise money. But again, they require hard assets that can be evaluated for their value. So, and getting back to using these developmental centers that states offer is a good way, because they have financial people, they have bankers retired, they have the SBA very much involved, and they can open up doors if the idea is a really good one and you can prove it, that you'll get financing. It's just a tough road, Rick, you know, to finance new startups.
There's so much in detail in Tom's book, Entrepreneur Me, You Too, Your Dreams Business Doesn't Need to Fail. Tom Souden, Souden, our guest and the author on the program. A couple minutes here at the end, I want to talk a little bit about some of the experiences in your milling days. And I love you describe it in the book. It's like the opposite of Walmart. You don't have all your money coming in. You've got all your money going out. You're waiting to get paid. You talk about the banks are always pressuring you and they basically dictate your business. Any funny stories that come out of the milling days?
Well, you know, when I got out of the Navy, I took a job with I wanted to continue my financial career, took a job with a bank in Los Angeles. And my dad flew out. I never showed up. And he asked me if I'd come back and help him. We had a family business. It was a flour mill, F-L-O-U-R, in Kansas. And it sure looked like a dead end to me. Father, son, I need to go back. And he says, just come back for a year. Well, of course, that was kind of a trap, and I could see it at the front end. Come back for a year, stayed 20 years. But the business was, it's a bad business for entrepreneurs, because unless you have just buckets of money, you have to pay for the grain before you ever get it. Then you mill it into flour, and you extend credit to your customers, usually 45 days. So when you grow that model, it's like it just takes more and more and more and more money. So the banks end up kind of owning you. And as long as they could look at your wheat value, they could turn that into cash in a minute. They're sitting kind of pretty, because, and they're always threatening to close you down if you step on your toes or whatever. On the other hand, Walmart collects money, kind of much like the lemonade on the sale, doesn't extend credit, pays their vendors upwards of 90 days, turns over their inventory really quick. So you grow that model and you generate buckets of cash. And so it's just the idea of, if you're going to start a business, try to think of one that generates cash when you grow, not demands cash. And we were just very, very lucky. Excuse me. I go into the details of how we skirted around collapse under financial pressure and finally became viable and then sold the business to a major grain processing company. But it was a difficult, very difficult, arduous period of time, yes, day after day. And, you know, looking back on it, we were just really lucky. That's the bottom line. We were lucky to end the day and exit out of the business.
Right? Luck has a lot to do with it. That story and so many more in Tom's book, Entrepreneur Me, You Too, Your Dream Business Doesn't Need to Fail, by Tom Soudan. That's S-O-W-D-E-N. Book available wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual places. Link onto our website, thisweekinamerica.us, for Tom's page on Amazon. You can order the book there as well. And my thanks to King Pages Press for arranging our conversation today, the author's marketing consultant. Tom, it's been a pleasure. So many great stories. What are you working on now? Do you have another book that you're working on?
Well, I've kind of want to wait and see what happens, if people can use this. It's my hope that this book will empower people to do their dreams of starting a business and be successful. And if that happens, then I've achieved a great objective in my life before I leave this planet. I've got some other ideas I want to do, kind of along the same idea. A book about investing that will take the risk out of it. I think there's a lot of people, especially retired people, that are struggling to make ends meet because of the inflation, that need to find ways to invest their resources so they overcome the inflationary effect, because we're all living longer and we're going to need more money than we thought we would. So that's in the incubation stage.
Well, I hope that works out and we have a chance to talk about it. It's been a fascinating conversation with Entrepreneur Me, You Too, author Tom Soudan, and the book available again wherever books are sold. Tom, a pleasure. Hopefully we can hook up again. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Thank you, Rick. Been a pleasure for me.
It's been fun. The book available wherever books are sold. A direct link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we are back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.